From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
There were some members of the National Association of Black Journalists and other journalists who encouraged me to join. I mean, I had an old college professor who was a longtime member, Bob Richards, who's still a member. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, Dorothy Gilliam, past national president of NABJ, and other people were really saying, hey, you know, Paul Delaney, Reginald Stewart was a major factor, Reggie Stewart, in saying, hey, you know, come on and sign. And then once I got in, you had members like David Anderson and others that were really pushing me along the way. And along the way, I met Larry Bivens, and I met Allison Bethel McKenzie, and other members who really sort of said, hey, you know, this is something you can be a part of. Because before I joined, it was just sort of this ivory tower sort of existence that I didn't think I could join. You know, it's a private, legendary, old majority, you know, white, you know, was one time whites only, one time men only.
Jeff Ballou, news editor at Al Jazeera Media Network English Language Channel and the 110th president of the National Press Club. Ballou was the first African-American male to hold the position and will mark the first time someone from a non-U.S. and non-Western-based television network has been elected president of the National Press Club. Founded in 1908, the National Press Club is a membership-based club of more than 3,100 journalists and communications professionals. As one of the nation's oldest journalism clubs, NPC is dedicated to supporting the ongoing improvement of the profession of journalism. Ballou, a Pittsburgh native, has been a journalist for more than two decades and has been part of the most journalism media on the local, national, and now global level, and has been a member of the NPC since 1992. Ballou took office on January 13, 2017. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Jeff Ballou, the 110th president of the National Press Club, In Black America.
We have something to offer. We have a great community, a family, if you will, of professional journalists and broader than that, media colleagues in the communications profession, so that sources in the on the communication side can be interacting with journalists on the reporting side. And it's not just about building reporter-source relationships for future stories, which is great, which is central to this, but it's also about the fellowship. It's also about building bridges across social lines. It's about raising money for scholarships. It's about doing events together that benefits the profession. It's about overseeing contests of our craft to see who's the best reporting on consumer affairs or international affairs or fill in the blank. And it allows colleagues to come together under one roof.
As the 110th president of the National Press Club and the first African-American male to hold the position in the club's 108-year history, Jeff Ballou was first elected to the NPC Board of Governors in 2012. In his new position, he will be responsible for the business and affairs of the club. Ballou's term on the Board of Governors will be 1 year, and his committee appointments include House Bar and Speaker's Committee. On the House Bar Committee, he will assist in looking after the physical plant, bars, and restaurants. And on the Speaker's Committee, he will assist with the selection of the NPC speakers, the club's most prominent committee. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Ballou is a graduate of Penn State University. He began his career at KDKA, where he worked as an intern for several summers while attending Penn State University. After graduation, he worked for WTTG-TV Fox 5 in the nation's capital. During his career, he has covered several beats, such as the White House, Congress, and the State Department. He currently is a news editor at Al Jazeera Media Network.
It's been a hectic start, John.
I can understand. Tell her, what was life like growing up in Pittsburgh?
I'm just, just a nice, lovely blue-collar upbringing. I mean, a lot of people are catching on to a days gone by glimpse of my hometown through the movie Fences by August Wilson. But, you know, yeah, basic working class, My mother was a nurse. My father was an airport baggage handler. They were divorced when I was a preteen. My mom pretty much raised me, and it was, I would like to think, a relatively normal existence. There was, you know, I had playmates on the block, and I went to school, and I was very active in any number of activities. I was always into something, whether it's Boy Scouts or building model rockets or playing soccer. Despite the working class existence, I think my mother worked very, very hard to make sure I had a lot of exposure growing up.
Brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have two, one of each, both older. My brother is the oldest, and my sister's in the middle, and I'm the youngest. So my siblings and I we're all still living. My parents are deceased in 1992 and 2016, respectively, and we're just trying to live our adult lives.
How did you select Penn State, or did Penn State select you?
Well, a little of both. I knew I wanted to leave home. I knew I wanted to just sort of, that wanderlust spirit was definitely a part of me. And as I finished up the Boy Scouts program, and mm-hmm. I had my, I was about to earn my Eagle Scout award, and one of the people, and I had been visiting colleges around that time, and one of the people who was on my review board actually reached out to one of the counselors at Penn State who happened to also have ties to the scouting program. He, too, was an Eagle Scout, an African-American, and he actually made a surprise appearance at my Eagle Board of Review. And not only did he show up at the board review, he basically put the offer on the table for Penn State, and that was that.
So what was your community project?
Oh, my goodness. My community project as an Eagle Scout was I had a puppet show for hospitalized children in the very famous Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh. And so I designed it closely with the Carnegie Museum of history and Children's Hospital. We worked together, and I did the show, and the kids loved it. And my very short-lived career as a puppeteer, I guess, paid off. And that was that. But it was very nice. I would say this just to backtrack to that part of that. My mother always was because she was a nurse and she was always of service to people her entire life, that rubbed off. Mm-hmm. That infected me. And so getting involved in something like scouting and other related service organizations and projects was a natural extension of what was always around me. And I am eternally grateful to my folks for putting that spirit in me.
We've known each other for pretty long time, but we really don't get a chance to actually find out why each individual decided on journalism as a career path. What was the reasons why you chose journalism?
Well, yeah, John, you're taking me back to 1991, I believe, in the Kansas City Convention of the National Association of Black Journalists.
Right.
When I was fresh out of college for a year. Yeah. I chose journalism while I was in college, I tripped into it because in college I changed my major three times, but I landed an internship with the very legendary KDK radio in Pittsburgh, and through the Inroads program, since we're talking about Black America, we're talking about a wonderful program started in the 1970s that sought to place minority students into internships in business and industry. But I was not the norm. Most of the students in the program were working for engineering firms, and they were working for Fortune 500 companies. And then there was me. And I had this sort of inkling that I wanted to be in journalism, and they sort of crafted this internship for me. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette linked up with KDK and say, let's look at this kid. And they brought me in, and they worked with this sort of piece of rough Ashler and this precocious 17, 18-year-old kid. And over the course of four years, came back summer after summer, and then got involved in radio in college and started writing the occasional column for the Daily Collegian at Penn State and hosting a radio show at Penn State. And then it just sort of exploded. My dean started taking me to journalism conferences and to the job fair at Howard University and here, there, and everywhere. And I got the bug. And I don't famously tell this story, but when I was an intern my freshman year, I was learning how to sort tapes, and the general manager, Mr. Berwanger, was walking through the tape library, and I was sitting on the floor surrounded by tapes, and there's this very tall, regal-looking African-American lady, and says, "Jeff," and I'm sitting there, I'm looking up, and says, "Yes, Mr. Berwanger, I want you to meet Oprah Winfrey." This is before she started her show. Mm-hmm. and I don't have any personal umbrage against Miss Winfrey, but she was clearly at the end of this tour, and she really didn't want to be bothered. And my one and only real instance of encountering her is somebody who simply wanted to leave the building. And so it wasn't all the warm and fuzzies that most people associate with Oprah, but I understand. I was a student. I was sorting tapes. And it was sort of the, who the heck is this kid? But that aside, I was surrounded by a wonderful group of people from all aspects of the profession at KDK, people who I would go on to have long-term relationships with, whether it was Lynn Hayes Freeland, whether it was Harold Hayes, whether it's Rahama Ellis, whether it's Michael Fountain, who went on eventually to ESPN after a time at the CBS Evening News. These were people that were all in the KDK newsroom. Right. That had a legendary mother-daughter anchor pair of Bill Burns and Patty Burns and Bob Kutzman on weather. And these are larger-than-life people, but they all took the time to be nice. And Mike Watkins, who I still keep in touch with, one of my mentor on site at the time, was a program director, and he went on to, and now he's in Atlanta, and they molded and they shaped me and they encouraged me. While it wasn't straight on chasing news, I was in talk radio for the most part. That got me going, and then they introduced me to person after person after person until I ended up in Washington, and I think it was I won't say it's a charmed existence. I would say it was an extraordinary series of blessings that I didn't exactly always avail myself of properly, because when you're young like that, you can be a little arrogant and not always appreciate everything along the way. But I finally got it, and eventually Lou Prado and John Connemikes and Charles Bierbauer got around, and Fred Young got around me and got me properly started with the Hearst Broadcast Fellowship. Before that, came to Washington, and Brandon and to Phyllis Crockett and National Public Radio, and she and Sheila Brooks and other people wrapped their arms around me and really got me going. And then when I went to Boston for the Hearst Fellowship, that really, sealed the deal. And the rest, as they say, is history.
What is it about working behind the scenes that really excites you?
I think, all of my life, I enjoyed making decisions. I don't like other people telling me what to do in the nicest possible way of saying that. And so I like to be at the table where the decisions are made. And I think shaping a product, and in a case of news, being able to help select what we cover, why we cover it, how it's covered, I think it's important. And as I've become more seasoned in the business, especially as an African-American journalist. I think that, in fact, not I think, I know how critical that is to have a variety of voices at the decision table to make sure that stories are covered fairly, have a diversity of thought, diversity of voices, are thorough, are accurate, and are informative.
If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Jeff Ballou, the 110th president of the National Press Club. Jeff, you've been a member of the National Press Club 1 year out of college, I understand. What is it about the National Press Club that excited you so much back when you first started doing this?
Well, you know, just a couple years out in 1992, Greg Spears was the president, and there were some members of the National Association of Black Journalists and other journalists who encouraged me to join. I mean, I had an old college professor who was a longtime member, Bob Richards, who's still a member. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, Dorothy Gilliam, past national president of NABJ, and other people were really saying, hey, you know, Paul Delaney, Reginald Stewart was a major factor, Reggie Stewart, in saying, hey, you know, come on and sign. And then once I got in, you had members like David Anderson and others that were really pushing me along the way. And along the way, I met Larry Bivens, and I met Allison Bethel McKenzie, and other members who really sort of said, hey, you know, this is something you can be a part of. Because before I joined, it was just sort of this ivory tower sort of existence that I didn't think I could join. You know, it's a private, legendary, old majority, you know, white, you know, was one time whites only, one time men only. You know, it just didn't seem like it would be a fit. But nothing, once I actually joined, it was always a warm experience. Nobody ever sort of pushed me away. Whether it was the president who was, Greg Spears was the president at the time, Gil Klein and Clayton Boyce, I think as presidents, were critical to really sort of sealing my involvement and loyalty to the club, and because they were always encouraging, and they also helped me find the NABJ chapter in D.C. a home back then. And this is in 1993. And so the fact that they were willing to make this extension, they were having this extra outreach to young members, of which I was one at the time, those of us who were under 35, what you began to see, and once they put, the magic thing was once they put me on one of their sort of trademark luncheons, daises, and I'm sitting up there on the dais with Vice President Al Gore, Commerce Secretary Ron Brown. This was a luncheon that was about the what was known then as the information superhighway, what we now know is simply the internet. And, you know, Al Gore is holding forth, and, you know, and Reggie Stewart's the chairman of the Speaker's Committee, and David's up there, and Ron Brown's up there. And and I'm sitting here chatting up Ron Brown for, you know, an hour. And who knew? You know, I and back then I can tell you now, I'm sure this is question is eventually coming up there. I had no concept, no desire to be any part of any leadership, even though that was my bent to some degree. I had no desire to run the press club. I had no desire to chair a committee. I just wanted to just be a part and just, you know, hanging out at the bar and be a part of a committee, not necessarily run one, let alone be on the board and let alone be president.
I forgot to ask you, what's your current position in the industry?
I am a news editor for the Americas at Al Jazeera Media Network's English Language Channel. I've been there since its inception in 2006.
One would not suspect that in 2017 you are the first African-American to be president of the National Press Club. Is there any trepidation or any type of anxiety you see once you're sworn in? Oh, you're sworn in today, but, you know, once you actually get your feet moving?
Well, you know, I had and just to clarify, because it's sort of out there, but not quite out there. Mm-hmm. that I'm the first African-American male.
Okay.
The first African-American president is Sheila Cherry, the 97th president in 2004. I'm the second African-American president overall and the first man. And she and I have been talking about this for a little while now, and it's crazy when you really think about it. I thought that with all the advances in the industry and the way different organizations were desegregating over time, by the time somebody my age got to the post, that I thought the Clarence Pages of the world or the Carl Rowans of the world, or you pick, you know, Maureen Button, you pick a prominent African-American journalist, I thought they would have sort of checked that box, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 70s or worst case scenario, the 80s. And so it shows that a number of things. One, that the club still had a challenge attracting and retaining journalists of color. And clearly that's going to be something I'm going to be thinking about very carefully. And realizing this is not a free experience, you know, it's not cheap to join the National Press Club, but it is manageable for a working professional journalist who's not, you know, freelance is a tough sell because you know never know where your next check is coming from,
right.
But if you're in a regular full time job, assuming you're not, you know, swimming in red and debt, then I think it's relatively manageable, and we have something to offer. We have a great community, a family, if you will, of professional journalists and broader than that, media colleagues in the communications profession, so that sources in the on the communication side can be interacting with journalists on the reporting side. And it's not just about building reporter-source relationships for future stories, which is great, which is central to this, but it's also about the fellowship. It's also about building bridges across social lines. It's about raising money for scholarships. It's about doing events together that benefits the profession. It's about overseeing contests of our craft to see who's the best reporting on consumer affairs or international affairs or fill in the blank, and it allows colleagues to come together under one roof to do either the serious work of networking or the serious work of talking about critical issues in journalism, or if it's just knocking back a couple of adult beverages and breaking bread in the member restaurant. Though it's a serious it's a wonderful range of opportunities to get involved. We are now the onus is on us to better tell our story so we can attract the broadest possible range of colleagues into the house.
In my 40 plus years in this industry, I have never experienced what's going on as far as the animosity towards the press, both broadcast and print. What do you see some of the challenges as you as president, but also the industry going forward with this new presidential administration?
Wow. There have been a number of times in history where the press has been challenged, derided, shut out, or otherwise ill-treated by a White House or a congressional leadership. And this is definitely our turn in the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And the easy thing is to look at the president-elect in this case and call him a bunch of names. The hard thing is to extend an olive branch to the president-elect, properly critique the things that he has not done well in terms of doing right by our profession, in terms of how he has taken people who have given their personal and professional lives to get into doing accurate and responsible journalism and turning to them and deriding them or not calling on them in press conferences or any number of things that are in most common dinner tables would be seen as disrespectful and is beneath the office of the President of the United States. And you have to sort of appeal to a sense of a higher moral authority. It seems to be very challenging in this case because the president-elect is demonstrated a penchant for being very pugilistic in nature. But that doesn't mean we should give up on having a two-prong approach. On one hand, we're going to extend the olive branch to say, hey, do come into our circle. Do take our questions. We have a constitutional role in this wonderful democracy of ours. And the other is when he does engage to cross the line in terms of calling us liars or crooked calling us fake news when there are plenty of entities that have nothing to do with our profession that are doing a good job of that all by themselves that are making my jobs like mine harder. But pointing to legitimate news sources and throwing them under the bus for the sake of scoring political points does not serve the democracy well, does not serve the presidency well, does not serve the press well, and most of all does not serve the people well. And we hope that not just professionals in the journalism business keep aiming for doing accurate, unapologetically direct journalism, but private clubs whose memberships happen to be majority journalists like mine, like the National Press Club, we have a unique responsibility to invite people like the president-elect into our house. Subject them to a civil atmosphere of fair but tough questions and the appropriate give and take, and with the notion that it's not a shouting match, that it's not a name calling contest. When you're the leader of the free world, you have a responsibility to address the issues, to address how you're handling the issues, and to do it in a manner that is civil. And we, of course, have a responsibility to do it in a manner that is accurate and fair.
Jeff Ballou, news editor at Al Jazeera Media Network English Language Channel and the 110th president of the National Press Club. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to your future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.